All right, and welcome everyone to another Sunday afternoon here on Revolution Radio. I am Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel the Cabal. I'm also on PSN Radio and APRI Radio Network. I want to welcome a very special guest today. He's somewhat local to me, just in a neighboring town about 30 minutes away. I want to introduce Ray Kirkus. Ray is a husband and a father. In his mid-50s, became involved in a liberty movement, if that's what you want to call it, in the late 1990s, after being awakened to reality, after assuming that the government was there to help and provide justice when provided with the facts, but learned on the contrary, a huge and expensive lesson that caused him to delve more into the state of things outside the scope of what a wet as spoon fed to be the MSN of the majority of Americans. It is pretty clear that we live in a hoax. He challenges local governments regularly and tries to throw wrenches into the gears of abuse of power exercises municipalities engage in all their most local levels. Luckily, he has a thick skin, and being the object of mudslinging for those who he exposes, but the more they mess with him, the more he fights back. Success is hard to gauge as the battle continues, and Ray also has a bachelor's of science in business communications. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Local activism, that is what I am going to be myself getting into a very, very big aspect of my life in 2015. You know, being on three networks that are worldwide and actually having more people know my name in Europe and other states than what they do in my local area, that really seems to be an objective to get some more local things going. And that's what you've been doing since the late 90s, has it, Ray?
Since the late 90s, but it started a little bit in Illinois, but when I moved out to Michigan, I noticed that it was the same in small communities as it was in huge communities. It doesn't matter where you go. A lot of people think they live in small towns and that the small towns are immune from you know, the same stuff that's happening at the federal level, and they're not at all. It's actually in some cases even worse.
Well, certainly it is. A lot of people don't even know that what goes on the local level is just a small microcosm of what goes on the federal level. A lot of the times the small local little towns either mirror or run federal policies, and depending on whether you have a large corporation in your area is, well, like you and I happen to have Westinghouse in our area, and they are quite corrupt, as you are.
Well, we have Whirlpool, actually.
Whirlpool, yes. I'm sorry, not Westinghouse. Whirlpool,
that's okay.
Yes.
Yes, it's Whirlpool, and yes, that's about the biggest corporation that's here. And at the same time, our county.
Oops, are you there? Oh boy, having troubles. Are you there, Ray? Okay. Well, I can just wait here for a few seconds and see if I can get him back. There it is. Okay. Hello. Are you there now?
I called you back. I don't know how much of this you got.
Well, we started to get into Westinghouse, and about 2 seconds into it, you got cut off.
Yeah, that's been happening a lot on my phone lately, and I'm not really sure why. Just to put a glimpse on this, I was informed by my local government accidentally in a FOIA that actually I was being investigated by a private investigation firm here in from South Bend, and at this last council meeting, it was disclosed that I was in fact being investigated. So I don't know if my phone is being monitored or not. I'm sorry.
I'm sure it is. I have a friend out in California. I have on quite often, Greg Ford, and he has the same type of problems you have. always gets an echo. There seems to be a delay, and phone conversations get cut off. He's been cut off my Skype conversation, I don't know, 3 or 4 times over the last year and a half. So,
okay, but I can get back on the subject we were talking about a little bit about Whirlpool, but I wanted to bring into the picture that Berrien County is also mostly subsidized by federal funding. I mean, we participate in all types of federal programs, and those programs, you know, can contractually tie us into performance to the federal government. So basically, Berrien County is a federalized a component of the federal government. Anytime the feds want to take over Berrien County, they can.
Yes, it is. I just wanted to tell the listeners, because they are worldwide, we are referring to Southwest Michigan, Berrien County, Michigan. So go ahead, Ray.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay, sure. And like I said, there's a lot of different programs that are federal that are implemented countywide, and those monies that flow through those programs are not on the budget. They're definitely not exposed as taxpayer money or fines or fees that are collected by the county, but yet they're almost like an individual that the county has through the comprehensive annual financial reports that money flows through. So, I mean, we have a sheriff here that will say that he's going to do anything that the federal government tells him to do. He says that publicly. And he doesn't, as far as I understand, he doesn't actually have a regular oath of office. He has an oath as an employee of the county, but he doesn't have an oath of office to the people. So, you know, and this translates, like I said, countywide, it translates village-wide, it translates citywide. Everybody's after the federal funds. If you vote, everybody's going after grants. A lot of municipalities actually hire grant writers going after these grants. And when these grants are federal, there's all kinds of strings attached, and we're basically turning everything into federal, you know, everything's under federal jurisdiction, and this is the same, this is where we're heading to. Unfortunately, most people don't understand that when you're applying for those federal grants, that the federal government has no money, they only have debt, there's only $18 trillion in the hole. So what they're doing is they're saddling their kids and their grandkids with more and more debt, insurmountable debt that's never going to be able to be paid off. But nonetheless, I mean, the attitude or the mindset is, you know, we have to do this for the now. And, you know, and this is money, and if we don't take this money, because there it really is no money, but if we don't take this money, then somebody else will, so we might as well take it.
Well, yeah.
I'm always arguing that point.
Yeah, let's talk about some of these factions on the local levels. Well, let's take the local police for one instance, Ray. They are being told erroneously, of course, that there is no money, and they have to generate revenue. They've basically come out in the last decade or so that and said that they are not really going to serve and protect anymore. They are just there to generate revenue.
Oh, absolutely. Well, as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has said that they don't have to protect you. They have to protect the general public. First of all, second of all, for example, in Berrien County, you have people who are just recently this changed just last week. When you were arrested and you were put into the Berrien County Jail, if you were locked up on a Friday in your T-shirt or in a pair of shorts, it doesn't matter if it was December, you were put into intake. And when you were put into the intake area, the temperature was well below 68. That many times it's like right around the high 50s, low 60s. And you aren't given a pad, you aren't given a blanket, you aren't given anything, and it actually forces your core temperature down. I mean, and what they're doing, it's a form of terrorism to intimidate people into a plea bargain. That's exactly what it was. Now, just last week at the county commission, the sheriff was questioned about this. It was 2 weeks ago, actually. The sheriff was questioned about this by some of the county commissioners who actually fund the sheriff's department. And one of the questions was, well, why don't you give these people blankets, even though this intake area is surrounded by glass and all the deputies can see everything, what's going on inside there. There's no place to hide in there. It's, like I said, it's just all concrete, and you're supposed to lay on the concrete. And he says, well, I'm not going to give them blankets because they might commit suicide. So the county commissioner said, that was Andy Bauer, he said, okay, I can understand that. Well, why don't you give them pads? And the sheriff just said, well, because we just choose not to. So the bottom line is that, you know, the sheriff is a participant into coercing plea bargains out of people by torturing them. So, you know, and nobody says anything about it. Nobody speaks up about it. The sheriff says, this is my jail. Well, no, it's not his jail. It's the people's jail. We pay for that jail. We're responsible for the way inmates are treated in jail, especially people who haven't been convicted. This is, this, you know, this is, very, very important to know that a lot put into that jail are eventually found, you know, to be innocent, but not if they're compelled to a plea agreement, then of course they get a conviction.
Well, that's the ultimate goal of any establishment, whether it's local or state or federal. They have to get our permission, right? They have to get us to contract with them. And a plea bargain is just basically a contract. Well, some of them actually know, and some of them absolutely know that they have to have our permission. Once you're arrested, pulled over, whatever the case is, for the most part, 99 and 9/10 of the time, right, people give themselves up just with their own actions and their own words, and give up their own money willingly.
That is correct. People don't understand. The problem is people don't understand. You mentioned the contract, and everything is contract. Literally, all law is contract, and all contract is law. We're contracted with the Secretary of State with our driver's license when we're exercising a privilege to drive instead of a privilege to travel, or instead of a right to travel. These are all contracts that are implied. It's basically like serving a summons. When an officer pulls you over in a car and asks you for your driver's license, you give them that driver's license. You're telling them that you're operating in commerce.
That's right.
You're subject to all the laws.
Absolutely.
Right, but and people don't. You know, I actually do the. I have a driver's license. I have insurance. I have everything else. But if I am to be pulled over, I always tell the officer, "Well, what makes you think that I'm driving right now?" And you know, is there something you want to tell me? Well, first of all, no. You never have anything. You should never tell anything to a police officer that you shouldn't answer any questions.
No, the
most innocent thing you might tell a police officer is asking that where you're coming from, and something might have just happened in an area where you're just coming from. And he'll tie you to that area. So, you know, it's like, where are you going? I'm going that way. Where are you coming from that way? That's all you need to know.
That's it. Absolutely. You know, the only words that should be coming out of someone's mouth when they get pulled over by a so-called police officer is, am I free to go? And that should be it.
Am I free to go? Oh, am I being detained? If I'm not, then am I free to go? Yes, am I being detained?
You don't even need to bring that up because you are being detained. Once you get pulled over, you should just say, "Am I free to go?" and nothing else.
You're right. That's correct. I have to agree with you.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get into a bit of the history of your activism, Ray.
Sure. Well, it was in the 90s. I mean, like you said in the beginning of your program, it was in the 90s. I got involved in a little bit of a domestic issue with in a marriage, and nonetheless, my kids got involved. A local busybody got involved, didn't like something I said, and said I was doing something to my kids. I don't know what it was, and in Illinois, the DCFS decided to involve themselves into my life. And the bottom line was, they found out that there was nothing going on, but nonetheless, they came into my house. They did certain things that I didn't want them to do, and at that time, I was very naive. You know, I thought that you tell them the truth, you tell them everything, you know, everything comes out in the wash, everything's going to be okay, right? That's what most people think. If you, you know, the adage, if you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide, right?
That's the way it's, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to work anyways.
Sure, but that's not true at all. It's a business. I learned that the business is, the more clients that you get into this system, the more they could justify the money needed for the next budget. So the more people are involved in the system, the more employees they need, the more services they need, and the best thing to do is just to get more and more employees. And that's when they started, you know, anonymously, do you see child abuse? Do you see child neglect? Call this number anonymously. So people start calling on, I don't like my neighbor, you know, I'm going to tell them that they're beating their kid. You know, it really is how ridiculous it is, and it really is how simple it is. So the due process falls totally out the window in the juvenile system. So anyway, without getting into that one in detail, my kids are grown now, everything's fine, but that's what set me off, because I couldn't understand how does it work this way? Why is it happening this way? Why doesn't anybody want to listen to the truth? Well, because they don't want to listen to the truth. They want to generate business. And that's how it is. So I started getting more involved when I moved to Michigan. I started running for council. I started going to commission meetings. I started seeing what's going on. And the more you listen to what these people are doing, and the more you read about what the laws are and what they are allowed to do and what they do, it's totally different. The problem is that when you have the police policing the police, nothing happens. When you have the people in charge and they're allowed to regulate themselves, when they do things wrong, they don't care. And they'll actually tell you they don't care. Well, so what? So what are you going to do about it? And that's kind of the attitude that it is. We're going to do what we want, and there's nothing you can do about it. This is what's happening across the board. So I started, like I said, started running for commissioner. When I saw that they're going to take, in our county, they're going to implement the 1033 program, and I started taking M16s, M14s, grenade launchers, MRAPs, military vehicles, and employing them into the county under the federal 1033 program, getting all this military gear in here. And I started going to commission meetings asking, what do we need an MRAP for? And what do we need an MRAP for? Which is a mine resistant ambush protected vehicle, big tank, a 20 ton tank. So, the answer from the sheriff is, well, it's to keep my deputies safe. And then the next question is, well, safe from whom? And, you know, again, you get the same adage, well, because we have a nuclear power plant here in Bear. We have one in Palisades. We have one right outside the county, you know, and that's a national security. You know, we have to protect us from terrorism, or if we have a second fourth shooter, and all these different scenarios unwinding that have never happened here. And when you ask the sheriff, well, what makes you think it's going to happen? Well, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when, according to him, and that's just how it is. So we started saying, well, we don't need this stuff. The people don't want this stuff. And we started going to commission meetings in large groups challenging this, but it doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of this activism doesn't matter. That you could change things is to get yourself into positions, whether it's on a city council, whether it's on a zoning board of appeals, a planning commission, a school board, something like this. And what's happening now is people don't seem to care anymore. They're so complacent that they don't want to get involved. They figure government will run itself. As long as they're not personally affected, everything's still okay. The problem is that they're running out of people who have already been affected, and those not affected eventually will be affected.
Well, and you know, Ray, just millions and millions of Americans have the same type of mentality that the Germans had in the middle and late 1930s. You know, they had the mentality, well, the Stasi SS is not coming after me, so I'm not going to do anything to bug them and make them angry.
Well, there was I think he was a Protestant minister. I can't remember his name, but there's a little adage or a little slogan. So when they came for the Jews, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew, you know, and it was when they came for the Unionists, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Unionist. When they came for the Protestants, I didn't speak up. And then when they came for me, there was nobody left to speak up for me.
Exactly.
And when, you know, I mean, they're drumming up business. And this is business. By the way, this is business. This is all about money. I mean, we're all chattel to the government. That's what we are. And, you know, we provide a tax to the revenue, and then they fleece us in their criminal or their, you know, their other administrative world. I mean, that's what they do with traffic violations or zoning ordinance violations or everything else. It's all about money. It's all about fleecing you for what they can get out of you. And a lot of times the judges and the courts will even tell you, well, we're humane. We're here to work. If you can't pay the fine all at one time, you know, we're willing to work with you. We'll take payments. We'll do this. We'll do that. It's all about the money, not about anything else.
It absolutely is. It's actually always been about the money, and it's never been about freedom. It's never been about liberty, and it's never been about anything else but the money.
I agree. Well, money and our servitude. I mean, the whole point is you don't want to be. My problem is that I'm not exactly a whistleblower. I just expose the bad things that are going on, and it's sometimes crazy because you catch these people in power red-handedly doing things that are absolutely wrong, absolutely unlawful, and you expose this to either the county prosecuting attorney or you take it to the attorney general's office, and it's like, well, it's not our problem. We're not going to deal with this. We don't want to touch this. This is a civil issue. Everything becomes a civil issue, because even though it's a criminal issue, because a lot of times it may be a civil issue at a local level, but then it's a criminal issue at a federal level. I mean, you still have 1983, you have civil rights violations. You have all kinds of other federal statutes, but of course your local governments aren't going to go after a federal law. Then you have to try to contact the FBI, and the FBI is more interested in corruption and other things, which you figure they would be interested in local governments and their corruption, but it seems like they really don't have much of an interest in that.
No, they don't. What was the Ray, what was the actual first encounter you had that really sort of rubbed you the wrong way?
Well, it was when I actually let the DCFS back in Illinois. But I did everything that with my wife. We did everything that they asked. They questioned my children, and actually it was interesting because they questioned my kids in a leading. It was very leading. They almost had to adamantly, because they did it in front of us. I guess now they do it without the parents, but it was in front of the parents. And it's like they would almost give a scenario and, well, does your father do this to you? Does your mother do this to you? It's like, and the kids would say, no, no, no. So it all went away. And then when I actually was getting divorced with my wife, it was my mother-in-law, my mother-in-law that brought it back into play. And then they based it on, well, this isn't the first offense. You're already in our records as being a problem before. Even though it was vindicated, even though everything was fine, all right, they still went back to, like, you know, they say, well, you've been arrested before. I mean, well, you can get arrested for anything. You can get arrested, you know, for spitting on the sidewalk, wearing dark glasses at night, whatever local law is in existence. But then they use that against you. Oh, you've been arrested before. Or you've been accused of doing something before. It doesn't matter if you've been. And then there's a second time around. I mean, literally, they took my kids based on what they call the credible informant, which was, of course, somebody who you're battling with in a legal, you know, custody battle. You're battling with them, and all of a sudden that side is considered to be a reputable and somebody that has some weight. And we went through this for a couple of years, and eventually that was the first thing. The other things that they keep going on is when these local governments are doing things that are illegal. They just literally are illegal. They are federalizing this entire country, and that's what's really driving me crazy, is that they are federalizing this country. All the autonomy, all the sovereignty that even the local communities would normally have are being destroyed, and people keep saying that, well, the federal government is at the federal level. We're still doing things at the local level. You're not doing them at the local level if you're using federal money. And this is what I'm seeing. This country is bankrupt. We're broke. We don't have any money to do anything. We have nothing but debt, and we have long-term obligations that run into the hundreds of trillions of dollars that are never going to get paid off. Yet, everybody's got their hand out. Everybody's got their hand out for these grants, need this grant, need this grant. And every time you start talking to people about, you can't do this anymore. This is what hurts me more than anything. You can't do this anymore. They don't care. This is grants. We're going to do this. We're going to involve these federal programs because they have all the money. And that's what I'm fighting on a regular basis.
Yes, it is. I believe they actually admit to $19 trillion of the of fiat currency debt, but what they don't admit to is probably in the vicinity of, some people think, well over $600 trillion. And there's even been numbers worldwide thrown out there at $1.5 to $2 quadrillion of debt. And that's just, that's actually a word that I hadn't heard in over 30 years since high school algebra, tell you the truth. Right.
We don't even know. I mean, everything would change subject to the interest rates. I mean, right now the interest is literally nothing. I mean, and right now so much of the GDP is going towards the debt. Imagine if the interest rates bumped up to 10-15%. There wouldn't be enough money to cover even the service to the debt. So, and again, you start taking that and you apply it to the long term. Yes, you could take that 100 trillion and you can easily turn it into 500 trillion. Because it all depends on how much you're paying on the nothing that was created from nothing to begin with. So,
you know, even the $19 trillion, just the interest off of that is mathematically impossible. That's just a black hole itself.
Yes, it'll never be paid off. It'll never be paid off.
No, it can't be. It can't.
And
be,
it's not.
No.
And they're not even thinking about paying it off anymore because, like you said, it's mathematically impossible.
Right. No, but they're just going to have to, they're just blaming it on the older people. They're blaming it on the welfare people. They're blaming it on this, that, and the other thing. And it's just a red herring. They're not even blaming what the true actual facts of the matter are.
Well, the people, I mean, again, and I have to kind of part, I've spoken to Tea Party people. I've spoken to a lot of people about the excessive policing, and in their meetings, they're always concerned with, you know, the poor people, the useless eaters. You know, that is just a small fraction of the corporate welfare that goes out into the military-industrial complex, the criminal justice-industrial complex. All these other, I mean, that's where the money goes for all the subsidies and everything else is humongous compared to the few dollars that goes to the welfare. Actually, poor people welfare. Even though there's a lot of fraud in that, it's still nothing compared to the size and the scope of the monies that are spent to the people with big money to begin with, the corporations, the multinational, transnational corporations that are getting all kinds of federal funding, plus the countries that we subsidize for these companies. Nonetheless, the countries that we support, Israel, and I mean, it's not only Israel. We give tons of money for the other Middle Eastern countries as well. So. Yes, it's they target the wrong thing, and it's a divide and conquer on a regular basis. You know, even with this police brutality, it's always a divide and conquer. It's always a black versus white thing. It's always a rich versus poor thing. It's that's what they want to do, because you can't have people working together. It just doesn't work that way.
No,
it'll be too powerful for them.
No, they can't. They have to keep the fight alive. They have to keep this racism thing going, right? They cannot possibly have a black man talking to a white man and working differences out. Once, you know, 330 million people here in America and 7.3 billion people all over the planet realize what's going on and start talking to each other, these people become irrelevant overnight.
Oh, yes. Well, I host a Facebook page called Exposing Excessive Policing, and I try to put it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with things that I could find that were actually published nationally, or sometimes even worldwide, on what the police get away with and what they do, and sometimes they get caught or not. And it's not black people that are just. I mean, I'm going to say, percentage wise in the United States, it probably is more blacks than others. But it's just not blacks. You have Kelly Thomas in California, who got beaten to death by a bunch of white police officers. There's all kinds of white people, Hispanic people, women, men, everybody else. They're being abused by the police, and the police get away with this. And there's numerous reasons for this. Number one, I mean, it's in the training. The training has changed for the police as compared to the police that I grew up with. Like I said, I'm in my mid-50s. And the training has changed after 9/11, after 2001. They started using more aggressive training for the police. Michael Chertoff's watch, the Department of Homeland Security, started offering local police departments a different kind of training, because, you know, anti-terrorism type training. And that's when they started getting more aggressive, and the police unions had a lot to do with this. The police unions make sure that they have deals to where their union members, and understandably so, are protected. And that's why a lot of times the police officers are acting calls within the scope of their duty. If they're trained to do this, I mean, they're trained to shoot somebody with a golf club. I mean, if you go up the golf club, you shoot them, because that golf club might knock your M16 out of your hand, and then you'll be at risk, even though you've got 20 guys behind you with M16s. That's insignificant.
Yeah.
But then they shoot the guy who picks up the golf club. I mean,
yeah.
It's simple.
Yeah, you happen to mention 9/11, Ray. That's also right around that same time period where maybe it was suggested to many, many of the police forces all over the country to start looking at the army or the marine or the whatever it happened to be. They started to look for the military for their police forcing, their policing. They started to get MPs right out of the army or whatever military force it happened to be, and they started to aggressively go after the military personnel for their local police forces.
You're absolutely right. I mean, not to say, okay, a lot of people say, well, the police are getting militarized. Well, the modern policing is, to a certain point, already militarized. I mean, they call them Peel's principles. Sir, I can't remember her first name, but Peel is responsible for the way the police are set up, the modern police are set up. And the reason being that, you know, they wear uniforms, they have rank and file, they, they have different ranks and things like that. But it's the increasing militarization of the police that concerns me. Not just that, but yeah, policing is moving more into soldiering. And you're absolutely right. They want to recruit the soldiers because they know that these guys are brutal. They know that these guys that were in Iraq or in Afghanistan, they want that mindset. And these are the guys that, and even the older officers, the older policemen that are in the force, they're worried about these young guys that come in. They're worried about these new kids come in because they actually say that, hey, these guys are nuts. I mean,
they are.
These guys want that confrontation. They want that. They get a high out of this. I mean, they do.
They've been more or less conditioned over there in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places to be brutal. That's been their thrill. That's also one of the main reasons why the militarized gaming industry started up probably in the early to mid 80s, or well, at least the mid 80s, if not the early 90s, where most of these young kids were growing up and they were playing these Nintendo games, these PS3s, whatever they
call them. Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, yeah.
Because we're desensitizing. We're desensitizing the young into respecting life and to respect. Yeah, I mean, it's all gore. It's all gore. It's all blowing people in the smithereens. It's all getting them ready for this. I mean, and yes, then they go to the military, and you know, they want to do this. I mean,
they're desensitized. They're desensitized there. Yeah.
I know some guys that came back from Iraq, and they were actually told, many of them, well, hey, you don't want to be part of this. You just look the other way. This is going to be done, and that's what they're told. This is going to be done. We're going to deal with this. And it's like it's really some scary stuff that I hear from some of these guys that came back. So, and yes, they do. They get into the police department because it's a government job. It's got benefits. It's got other things, and it's real easy. Like you said, it's real easy because they're already in the MP. They already have the quote unquote. You know, they don't have to put them through another academy. They don't have to do this. They go right in. You know, and it's even funny. It's because when it's just to tie it together, it's like, well, who's going to, I even told our sheriff, well, who's going to drive the MRAP? Oh, we got guys that can drive this. Well, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you have to actually, in the military, when they were making these, you actually have to go to MRAP school. You actually have to learn how to drive these vehicles because they're so top heavy that you know, there's certain ways that you have to keep them from flipping over, from rolling. I mean, because they, cause, you know, so they actually already know how to do this, which means that we have already got a bunch of sheriffs in our county, or deputies in our county that are ex-military, no question about it.
Yes, absolutely. I have to tell you a little story. One of my best friends on one of my networks did a show back in December of last year, and he happened to mention, and it just resonates with me a lot. He happened to say that if you metaphorically, not you personally, well, just you, if you are able to be told, or if you are able to be forced to do something against your will, then you metaphorically are the problem. It just resonates. Well, I mean, it's just so true. You know, if you can take your nice shiny black suit off, or your blue suit, or whatever color it happens to be, gray, and you don't feel that you are able to do some of the things that you can do with this shiny badge and this nice shiny suit on, then there's something wrong with your brain, I think, Ray. Being
well, there's a power that you know, that's, you know, the old adage, you know, power corrupts, absolutely, sure.
It does. And, yeah.
You got the magic. You're kind of saying it's a magic suit. All of a sudden, I put
exactly
on
a magic suit
and a magic
badge.
But technically, that's under the color of law. See, that kind of falls kind of into the same place. I can do this because I'm going to be protected. I have the authority to do this. I think it kind of goes back to even some of the experiments that used to be done, like the Milgram experiments. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with that entire scenario where people were shocking. They were shocking,
yes,
people in another room.
I am.
Or actually,
I am.
Well, they thought they were shocking people with electrical currents, is because somebody with authority behind them was telling them to keep going, keep giving them more voltage there.
Yep.
And it was okay because they it was okay for them to do this. And
yes.
It was the same. It's,
yes,
basically the same thing that was probably going on in Germany during World War II.
It was, yeah,
it's that authority figure. But some people won't, and those are the people that they don't like.
Exactly.
Won't. So I'm not going to do this. This is wrong. It's immoral. It's improper. It's wrong. I'm not going to do it.
Yes. Allegedly, Barack Obama has gotten rid of over 220 top military officials that have not passed his litmus test, so to speak. You know, they've already told him a few years back that they weren't going to go along with the agenda, and they were relieved of their duty.
Yes, I did hear and read a little bit about that. I also heard something most recently that he was speaking again about somewhat nationalizing the police force across the board. I don't know if you recall what that was probably maybe a month or so ago, but he was talking about, you know, still be autonomous for their areas, but again, they would be somewhat standard. Again, everything is a move to nationalize everything right now. That's how it works.
Yes, it is.
If you accept the 1033 program, you accept the military gear, police departments are accepting not only military gear, they're accepting, even Waco. During Waco, they not only had the FBI over there and the ATF, but they also had foreign military supervising, and not just supervising, but also watching and witnessing what was going on. But they had all kinds of involvement into Waco. So they have a lot of military involvement in surveillance, into investigations. They utilize it. And at this point, a lot of people bring up Posse Comitatus, but Posse Comitatus actually has been violated at least a couple of dozen times since 1959. I mean, Eisenhower started with it. It's been violated over and over and over again. So a lot of people would say, well, you can't do this. Posse Comitatus does not allow the military to act as a policing. The only thing they actually don't do is make the actual arrest. They're still prohibited from making the actual arrest, but they have a lot of involvement into local police.
Yes, they do. Ray, explain a little bit about this 1033 that you mentioned a few times now.
Okay, well, the 1033 program is the, it originally started, it's actually an old program. It's a 1033 program to where local municipalities can get surplus military at the time. You know, local places can get, used to be able to get Jeeps, generators, all kinds of things like that. But because of, especially now, because of all the military surplus that exists because of the wars that we've had in Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, there's just so much of it that they don't want to really leave it behind, even though they have, because supposedly ISIS has a bunch of it. But they didn't want to leave it behind, so they started offering it to police departments, local police departments. And at first, it was only supposed to be used for either drug enforcement or for anti-terrorism. Nothing more. You couldn't use them for anything more. And that's how police departments started putting in their applications to get Hummers, to get, used Humvees, to get MRAPs, to get grenade launchers, to actually even airplanes and helicopters. And I'm not saying that there's really something wrong with this particular program, but when, for example, in our situation here, but when you've got military Humvees that get dragged into a small municipality and are parked in front of City Hall, still in military garb, not even painted, they don't say police on it or anything else. They are military vehicles parked in front of City Hall, and you're walking, you know, to go pay a water bill with your child, your 3 or 4 year old child, holding a hand. And this is what they're witnessing growing up. They're witnessing military vehicles being in parking lots at City Hall. This is, again, desensitizing the public of what's going on. So they started and before you knew it, I mean, literally every police department in the United States has a 20-ton mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, you might think, well, that might not be a bad idea for a SWAT team or things like that. No, they don't have to have a SWAT team. They can just have a police department without a SWAT team, and they can do these things. And these things not only the MRAPs are the worst of all, as far as I could see, because a lot of bridges in localities, a lot of culverts, bridges, things like that, they're not even logistically set up to handle this kind of weight. I mean, these trucks, they destroy roads, they flip over, and when they do flip over, all right, they literally entomb the people inside of them. You can't get out. I mean, these doors don't open regularly. They're all hydraulic and pneumatic, and everything is, by the way, everything's computerized. They're very high maintenance. They get like 4 miles a gallon, and they're just unnecessary. I mean, they're military vehicles. There's no reason.
It's overkill, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And they're free. I guess, see, the free. Oh, it's always the free.
Always
squad.
The free. Yeah. I got a little story to share with you, Ray. About 4 or 5 years ago, I used to work at a little local gym around my area here, and I knew a police chief that was in a neighboring town, New Carlisle, Indiana. I'm sure you probably heard of that town, but
oh yeah, sure, I know exactly where it's at.
Yeah, he was the chief of police there, He actually gave up somewhat of a lesser job in South Bend, Indiana, to take the chief of police over in New Carlisle. And he told me that the DHS, Department of Homeland Services, gave him a laptop. And they actually told him that it was a censored and controlled laptop, that he wouldn't be able to check out a lot of sites that might be detrimental to the DHS, like, I don't know, well, InfoWars was actually one of the websites that was blocked from his laptop. There was many of the Patriot groups, their websites were blocked. If he actually tried to access any of those sites, he would, the feds would get a flag, and
they'd be alerted.
Yeah.
You shouldn't go here. You don't need to go. Don't go here. There's nothing here. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Move along. Move along. That's right.
But again, that's what the 1033 program is. And like I said, originally, and it seems like that program is supposed to be monitored. It's supposed to be monitored by whichever armories that you get the stuff from. It's supposed to be monitored, and it's only supposed to be used for police use. Originally, like I said, only for drug enforcement or for anti-terrorism. But now, it's as long as it's police use. But nonetheless, I mean, at the Blossom Time, the parade that they had here in our county the other day, they used the Bearcat. It isn't the MRAP, but it's still a subsidized vehicle that we have. It's a Lenco Bearcat, which is a little bit smaller. And they used that in the parade, and they had, you know, McGruff, the police dog, sticking out of the hatch up on top, you know, the little children all waving. It's amazing. This is all accepted, and not only accepted, it's glorified. It's the right thing to do.
Well,
but an additional problem with this, though, and this is my one last thing I want to bring up is that when you try to FOIA, when you try to use the Freedom of Information Act in these local municipalities to find out exactly what your department has gotten. Right, they are starting to block these FOIAs. They are starting to say that, well, because of possible police investigations ongoing, et cetera, and they start redacting everything in the FOIA, so they're not telling you what they have. And this is the problem that we're really having now with the government.
And this has actually happened to you, hasn't it, Ray?
Because once you have a secret government, and this is what Kennedy even talked about in one of the last speeches before he died, about secret societies and secrecy. Secrecy is anathema to liberty and freedom, absolutely. Because once the government, and especially at the local level, I mean, what secrecy can there be in a local village or a township about how they're spending your money? Nonetheless, these 1033 items might be free, but the diesel to put into that MRAP is not free. We're paying for it. The maintenance for that MRAP is not free. The maintenance for the Humvees is not free. The people that we're paying to fix them, everything else, that's not free. And to start redacting or blocking out this information for the general public that wants to know about what's going on in government, to start not telling them, either using that or using attorney-client privilege, which is another thing that they're using now, is
well,
we can't have the government.
Yeah, your phone's cutting out a little bit here and there, Ray, but I got that for the most part. But, you know, I just wanted to say, Ray, that we do have about 10 minutes left, and I would like to concentrate a little bit on another subject I'll give you here in a second here. But they have to, these people that are in control have to feverishly and fervently defend every single lie that they put out there. Because once one single lie has been broken down and tore apart, people are going to scrutinize and say, well, if they're lying about this, what else are they lying about?
Well, I mean, I have to, at one time, I probably would have agreed with you, but you know what? It's getting to the point where it's becoming so what? But I'll give you an example. Again, a small example. These people lie. I think I mentioned I was on a planning commission, and on a planning commission, I brought up a point that one of our planners was in a conflict of interest and didn't disclose the conflict of interest. And this was in about a meeting, and we had a city manager who basically said, so what? So what? So what? They did, so what? Who cares? I mean, this is how it's becoming. So what? We did something wrong. So what? And this is what's really starting to bother me, is because you would think, look, you exposed this. You showed it. It's in the open. Look, these people are doing something wrong. And the people are still saying, well, they said, so what? It's really not that bad. It's really not that bad. It's cognitive dissonance. It's, you know, it's the people living up underneath the dam, and they see that the dam is cracking, but if the dam breaks open, it's going to instantly kill them. All that water is going to come falling right on their head.
Yeah.
And you know what? They just can't come to the realization that that crack isn't going to break. It's a little crack. It's not a big deal. It's going to leak a little.
Yes.
But the people 10 miles downstream, they're more concerned with it because they know when that dam breaks, it's going to flood everything and it's going to come. But the ones that are going to instantly be affected are the ones that don't seem to care or they don't want to care.
Exactly.
And that's what scares me.
Exactly. Well, as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Ray, I'd like to concentrate maybe this last 5 or 6 minutes here to a subject that's that you've been following. You've been actually been going to some hearings up in Berrien County, Southwest Michigan, on a another local man up there in Benton Harbor, Michigan, that was pretty much railroaded, and that's Reverend Pinckney up there. You want to explain a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, he was railroaded. I mean, first of all, they convicted him on circumstantial evidence. They picked a jury that would and unfortunately, I have to blame his counsel more than anything else. I mean, Mr. Ted Parrish was his attorney. A very well known and supposedly very good attorney. But I think what happens again is people that are so well known that they really don't care whether they win or lose any more cases because their name, supersedes them.
Go ahead and explain the story a little bit, if you can.
Sure. Well, what happened is there was a recall election in Benton Harbor. They were having a recall election. They wanted to recall the mayor, Mr. Hightower, I believe his name was. And Mr. Pinckney was part of the procedure of collecting signatures. So more than enough signatures were collected to have the recall petition. Even not counting, I believe there were 6 or 7 that were questionable. And the signatures weren't questionable as far as the individual was concerned. The signatures were questionable because of the date was changed by a couple of days. And I guess the date was changed. Again, I don't know every single detail or nuance of it, but the date was changed because there was a three-day weekend. And because of that, the county would have been closed and they would have missed their mark by the 3 days. So the date was changed by 1 or 2 days. And it was only on 6 signatures, I think 6 or 7. Well, nonetheless, these were turned in. And the clerk scrutinized them, turned them, actually gave these petitions to somebody without any supervision, gave them to the mayor who was being recalled, who was, again, they were just being thrown around everywhere. Anybody could have done anything to them. And then finally, Reverend Pinckney was charged with forging these signatures under election law, violations. And they charged him for every single count. The jury found him without, again, circumstantial evidence. Nobody to prove that he did it or didn't do it, and then they charged him, convicted him, and he's sitting in Jackson, which is a state prison. But on another note, just the other day, we had a commissioner, a former commissioner, Mr. Robert Woolley, who was on the county commission, who was also charged with only one count of him after stealing money from the senior citizens' home, basically that he was a director of, for 7 years, numerous times, over and over again, whose wife was also involved. He also tried to cover his tracks by stealing money from a fireman's, some kind of fireman's retirement fund. And then he actually took and found a letterhead of an auditing company and did his own audit and submitted his own audit, forged his own audit. Yet Mr. Woolley did all this, and I think it's over $350,000 that he stole. He was charged with one count of embezzlement and got the same amount of time, basically, as Reverend Pinckney did. And he was also tried by judges in the same county to which he used to fund and all the judges that he knew of and had personal relationships with. So, I mean, this is a railroad job for Mr. Pinckney. And it was definitely, if you're in the club, if you're, you know, one of the good old boys and you hang with the good old boys, you definitely get a lesser sentence.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And it doesn't matter really what color your skin. If you're in that club, you're in like Flint, as some of the older
right.
people.
Let me add one last thing to this, and I
sure.
just want to make sure this is clear. What they did to Pinckney has nothing to do with race, even though some people know. They did it because he's a whistleblower, because he exposes them. It's not. They didn't do this because he was black. They didn't do this to Woolley because he was white. They did this because he bucked the system. They did it because that's what he does. I mean, again, it's not a race issue, and I don't want it to be divisive that way. And a lot of the supporters do believe it is, but I disagree.
Now, what is, I don't have it right up in front of me, Ray, but what is Reverend Pinckney's first name?
Oh, Edward Pinckney.
Edward Pinckney, okay. I hope people don't get him confused with Larry Pinckney. He's also a activist. Oh. And yeah, but
I don't know who that is.
He's another outspoken activist too, and he's does a lot of alternate media radio, and hopefully I can get him on someday. But anyways, we've got just a couple minutes left here. You want to close this out? Any kind of websites or just any kind of little minute and a half thing you'd like to say?
Well, sure. Well, if somebody wanted to, they can go to on Facebook. They could look up. It's open to everybody. It's called Exposing Excessive Policing. It's just a Facebook page, and anybody is willing to post anything that they might find, in especially something in the media that's out there in the media regards to police action. And I would like to, really, really talk to your listeners and ask them to get involved in any aspect of government. Get yourself appointed to some kind of a commission, some kind of a board, something. Get your foot in the door, and so you can actually have something to say. And you won't believe how much corruption is in the most localist of your governments and how nobody really follows the rules.
No, they wouldn't. You briefly touched upon it, and I think one of the biggest keys is the CAFR, or the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. People can try to requisition or FOIA their own county's CAFRs, and they can, by process of elimination, see what money's going where and see how much is being stolen, and they can pretty much do local activism themselves if they'd like to.
Yes, they can.
And there's my music, Ray. This hour is done, so thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everyone. I'll be right back just here in a few minutes with another guest.